This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with F. King Alexander, the LSU president and chancellor, on the job now 6 months at the Old War School, and the new man in Tigertown. We'll talk about what's happening in higher education in Louisiana, and specifically the flagship university. For the first time in a while, a budget increase is in the offing. Does that spell good times at LSU? We'll talk with F. King Alexander. Also, Steve Winham, former budget director for the state of Louisiana, who's involved in a major literary event in St. Francisville. And Rebecca Parker, an ordained Methodist and Unitarian Universalist minister. She's in Baton Rouge for an event this weekend, appropriately at the Unitarian Church. But now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. And our special guest to spend much of the hour with us is F. King Alexander, LSU president and chancellor, man who was born in Kentucky, spent a few years there, and grew up in Florida, no stranger to the Southeastern Conference. And he grew up primarily in Gainesville, Florida. Last time I checked, that's an SEC town. So what was your experience like growing up there? I'm sure you have some recollection of LSU coming to town and certain athletic endeavors.
I grew up selling Cokes at Florida Gator games, so I remember LSU. And it was always a big weekend when LSU showed up, not just for football, but all sports. And I remember Old Alligator Alley, which is where the University of Florida used to play, and most people probably have forgotten all about that, but that's when LSU had some great teams, and Coach Brown was coaching LSU, and I just enjoyed every time LSU came to town because it was a big weekend whenever the Tigers showed up.
Well, that was the heyday for LSU basketball, and Johnny Jones is trying to bring the program back. Tough night last night, but it seems to be on the right track. Now, your mother was involved heavily in University of Florida athletics.
She certainly was. In fact, that's why we moved from Kentucky to Gainesville. She became the first women's athletics director at Florida and was charged with starting Lady Gator athletics and hired the first 3 and 4 women's coaches at the University of Florida. So she was well before Title IX kicked in to start supporting female athletics, and sort of grew up going to Lady Gator athletic games long before people started going to many of our women's sports, which were very pleased to see the type of crowds that come to our games.
Well, you must go back to, like you and your mother, to the Steve Spurrier days as a player at Florida. Pretty close, huh?
Spurrier had just left when we got there, but we know Coach Spurrier very well. He actually recruited my brother to play quarterback for him at Duke. So the Spurrier family and our family, we go way back.
Did your brother play there?
He played at Duke. Yes, he did.
Really?
He is a backup quarterback at Duke when Spurrier spent a couple years at Duke.
Yeah. He applied for the job here at LSU in 1986, did not get it, and he went to Duke, and he was one of the few coaches who was able to win at Duke University.
I think Duke actually, for the first time in 30 years, finished 6-5, and that was a great, great year that people still talk about Durham, North Carolina.
Yeah, they played Florida State in the ACC championship, and we're going to talk about other things other than athletics, but it was a big week for LSU football. The Tigers had a recruiting class that ranks with the best in the nation, and a great athlete coming to town in Leonard Fournette, and Les Miles isn't shying away from the hype. He's saying he might win the Heisman Trophy his freshman year.
Well, I found out how important. I didn't even know what day signing day was, but we were walking through the halls of the Capitol in Washington, D.C., and I turned around, and 3 or 4 of my staff members, including our student government president that was helping us in D.C., they were checking their emails and checking their social media accounts to see how many signees we had, and I realized that everybody but myself, they knew what signing day meant. I was a little out of the sorts on it.
Well, before he arrived at LSU, most recently, F. King Alexander led the Cal State University system in Long Beach, over 38,000 students there. And he also was president of Murray State in his native state of Kentucky for 4 years, from 2001 to 2005. But your PhD is from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. That's who LSU opens its football season
with. I find that I was just in Madison to give a lecture, and we talked quite a bit about the trade-off that we have. We open up with Wisconsin in Houston, and then I think they thought a neutral facility for us to play in would be Lambeau Field a couple years later. I'm not real sure that's neutral.
It'll be quite a trip, though, for LSU fans to play at Lambeau Field in Green Bay, Wisconsin. That's next year. But athletics at LSU, as you know, are they're big. Maybe some say maybe too big. How much emphasis can you have on athletics and it not detract from the overall mission of the university?
Well, I think you have to keep it in perspective, and you don't let it overshadow all the great things that are going on. We've got great faculty and great staff. More importantly, our graduates are doing outstanding things. And one of the messages we're sending clearly to the folks in Washington is that with all the emphasis on college cost escalation, all the emphasis on student indebtedness, there are a bunch of places out there, a number of institutions in a number of states that are doing it the right way. And when the national student indebtedness hits 72%, almost 30,000 in debt for 72% of the undergraduates, we're still at 35%. Only one out of three LSU students graduates with any debt, and the debt is less than half of what the national average is. So we're doing a lot of things very well. Our graduates are doing exceedingly well by all counts. So we're there to tell the folks in Washington that there are institutions who are not afraid of accountability and transparency.
297-5633-877-217-5757 and inkstershow@wrkf.org online for F. King Alexander, the president and chancellor of Louisiana State University. Your first name is actually Fielding, right?
It's Fielding. It's my uncle, great uncle Fielding, who was a deputy sheriff in Eastern Kentucky.
But you've been called King, I guess, since...
And King is my grandfather's name, and he had King's Barbershop in Paint Lick, Kentucky.
Well, it's a distinctive name for a distinctive man. As you can hear, the president of LSU is no stranger to these kinds of interviews. He knows how to handle a microphone. Now, at Long Beach, Cal State, you are facing budget problems there as well, maybe even more profound than you are here. It's really a nationwide challenge right now, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think you're seeing states coming out of the recession we just went through very slowly. But everybody needs to know. I mean, we went through some very difficult times, $30 billion state deficits, furloughing of campus faculty and staff and agreements with them. We even state employees receiving IOUs. And it wasn't that long ago. I mean, these are very difficult times that states faced. The stimulus packages helped, but getting out of this bad economy has been a slow recovery for everybody.
And the trend toward defunding public universities with taxpayer money, it's not just a Louisiana trend. That's something that's going on in other places as well.
Absolutely. That's one of, I think, perhaps the biggest issue, and one reason we were talking with the group we had with Secretary Duncan in the White House a couple weeks ago, that we've got to keep states engaged, and we've got to incentivize states to make sure that they continue to support higher education. If we don't do anything, the state of Colorado, and these trends continue, the state of Colorado will be the first to completely divest, not spend a single penny on higher education, and that's less than 10 years. So this trend has been going on since about 1980, and we must work with our legislators and our governors to ensure that states stay in the game and stay in the picture.
If that does not happen, what options are left?
Well, the options, the trends will continue to be pushed towards tuition-based federal system. So our higher education systems basically become a federally funded system on the backs of students. Tuition and fees become the primary source. Common citizens will not be supporting the next generation of students if nothing changes and we don't go forth. That's why we're very pleased that the governor and our system heads and our legislative leaders have come to us and have worked with us to seek an increase in this new budget that's coming up this year.
Because of the TOPS program and the admission requirements at LSU, I guess every in-state student at LSU is already available for the TOPS program. So you have most of the student body on some kind of financial program that helps them get through.
Absolutely. About 85% of our in-state students are getting TOPS at LSU, and that's in Baton Rouge. That number declines as we go around the state a little bit. But with TOPS on already there, with Pell Grants at their highest level that they've ever been, with the American Opportunity Tax Credit funding middle-class families with a $2,500 discount, our students are actually paying about $900 a semester, which has made it extremely affordable and is one reason why we can say only one in three of our students graduates with any debt going into the economy.
Well, that's a huge burden for many students when they get out of school all over the country. It's in the trillions of dollars, I think, when you collectively.
It broke $1 trillion 2 years ago, exactly.
297-5633. We will go to the phones in just a moment with F. King Alexander, President and Chancellor of LSU. Our line is open if you'd like to join us, 877-217-5757, wherever you may be, for the new man in town, in Tigertown. Now, you've worked with Governors Schwarzenegger and Brown in California, two real characters, and now you've got Bobby Jindal. Those would that's a trio that is different.
Well, I've actually fortunately I've worked with lots of governors. Governor Paul Patton in Kentucky for 8 years, and every governor's different. Every style is different. Mm-hmm. I've been very pleased with the relationship that I've formed with the governor, with Governor Jindal. And very pleased with the fact that he's been willing, very willing to work with us and his folks to work with us closely. So it's been a positive 6 months, very positive 6 months. Governor Schwarzenegger was quite intriguing, but he had a great staff that worked closely with us and would call us and ask us, are these good ideas or not? Governor Brown was a completely different style. With a lot of experience, but a completely different style from what we were used
hands-on,
to.
Hands-on, right?
Very hands-on. In fact, it showed up at every one of our Board of Trustees and Board of Regents meetings. And I think our meetings lasted twice as long when he'd show up.
Well, Jerry Brown is quite a character, and who knows, maybe in 2016 the Democratic nominee for president will be 78-year-old Jerry Brown, and the Republican nominee will be 45-year-old Bobby Jindal. So we'll see. BJ against JB. 877-217-5757 for F. King Alexander, President and Chancellor of LSU, with a budget of over $3 billion a year and a student body that exceeds 44,000 students. Jim in New Iberia. Jim, good morning. You're on the air with President Alexander.
Hey, good morning, President. This is Jim Seymour with the American Sugarcane League, and we've had an opportunity to meet, and I just wanted to call and say hello, and real pleased that you understand the importance of the agricultural community in Louisiana and the fine work done at the LSU Ag Center and at the College of Agriculture. You seem to be doing a lot of good things for our university, and we're real pleased with that. I'll just hang up and listen to your remarks. Thanks so much.
Jim, I appreciate the comments, and I really loved my trip down and tour the sugarcane factory and just watch how the processing occurred and enjoyed our meeting and understand how important the sugarcane industry is. As you know, our Crowley sugarcane research station, and that's our rice research station in Crowley, but also our sugarcane research station right here in Baton Rouge are vital to the state's economy. And I think one of the biggest, if not the best asset that LSU offers the state of Louisiana is through our Ag Center, our Ag Extension operations. We're in every parish, touching every family, every community, and it's through Ag that we can do that. And we hope to utilize Ag in our research stations and centers to touch families and communities throughout the state with regard to educational attainment, health issues, and all kinds of new opportunities that we can provide to help build Louisiana together. So I really appreciate the comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Mark downtown asked, how much has the availability of student loans contributed to the rise in tuition?
This is a very delicate but very important topic, Mark. And the student loans, I do believe, as many economists believe, that it is the loan issue that has provided the opportunity for many universities to go to over 50,000 a year, and now even 60,000 a year. So those that can freely raise tuition on an annual basis without any scrutiny have done that. But there is a vast difference between universities that charge $6,000 and $63,000, which goes on throughout the United States.
We'll be back with F. King Alexander, president of Louisiana State University, when we return in 90 seconds on WRKF. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. LSU President and Chancellor F. King Alexander is with us. And in the first segment, we discussed the new pressures on universities regarding the depletion of taxpayer funds. And now tuition is at a level that some believe is unsustainable in the long haul. What's the highest tuition in America right now?
Last count, it was Sarah Lawrence up in the Northeast in Sarah Lawrence University, and I believe there's 63,650, which puts them in the 60,000 club with about 29 other campuses.
30 schools in the United States, it costs $60,000 a year to go to college. And at LSU, if you're an in-state student?
$7,800.
Stephanie in Southdown. Stephanie, you're on with King Alexander.
Well, good morning. I understand you were in D.C. Earlier this week or last week with other people from LSU and from the delegation. What did y'all do up there, and how important was it to present a unified front to ask for what y'all were going for?
Stephanie, that's a very good question. We went up together because we rely on about $600 million from the federal government, and that's NIH, NSF. That's also $27 million in Pell Grants for 9,200 first-generation students. So it's very important that we have a unified front, that one LSU shows up and talks to our delegation, works with our delegation, and prioritizes the things that we need to continue and the new funds that we need. And that's exactly what they told us how important it was. And these are our congressional reps and our U.S. senators. They said it's great to know exactly what LSU prioritizes, and they checked off the list on what they could help us with, and it was a very good 36 hours and a very productive 36 hours for LSU.
Thank you, Stephanie. Charles on North Foster. Hi, Charles. You're on with President Alexander.
Oh, good morning, Jim. Good morning, President Alexander. I have two quick questions. One is, universities like LSU and many others around the nation have built multi-billion-dollar athletic programs on the backs of African-American athletes, primarily African-American young men. Yet the enrollment of African-Americans at LSU and other Southeastern universities are historically out of proportion with the population. What do you plan to do about that? And as a follow-on question to that, the NCAA, that organization primarily has benefited majority institutions, minority institutions like Southern University have been on the outs. Why do you think that, universities like Southern continue to remain a part of the NCAA, which has a historical bias towards majority institutions? I'll hang up and listen.
You're hitting on a very important national issue, and that's the challenges that we're facing with African-American males. Our athletic programs, and fortunately, we have a extremely high graduation rate of our student-athletes. So many of our African-American males that go through the athletic programs are graduating at much higher rates than they would traditionally without the support structure that's put in place. But I agree with you. I think that we have put an overemphasis on athletics. We need to balance that with our outreach efforts in our communities. We developed a great program in California that I'd like to duplicate here by getting into the African-American churches and helping our pastors, which are very engaged in these topics, about getting more of our African-American men and women pursuing and understanding that they need to go to college and finish what they start. And we're going to work with so many communities throughout the state and do the same thing that we did in California. But the issue that you hit on, the male issue, is perhaps a national crisis. And it's going to require a lot more than just asking families to come to campus. We have to get into the arteries of our communities and get everybody to understand what our 6th graders through 12th graders need to be studying to be college ready, what we can do to help them, not when they show up as a freshman, but when they hit middle school in 6th grade. I think that's a challenge that higher education needs to take on and be a great partner with. Regarding the NCAA, the NCAA, most people don't realize, is a private organization. They're a private company. that relies on a $13 billion CBS contract. So whatever we can do to ensure that all of our schools, particularly those that have great public missions, are benefiting from the revenues that are generated privately, I think we need to work together to achieve that. So that at the end of the day, we don't have just 12 or 15 or 18 schools that are reaping all the benefits that go through the NCAA indirectly to colleges and universities. So I agree with your concerns.
Student body at LSU is now, what, about 9 or 10%?
We're about 10%.
10% African-American.
Need to do much better.
But higher than it has been historically. But in a state that has a 32% African-American population, that's lower, obviously, than the population in Louisiana. Neil on Bluebonnet. Neil, good morning. You're on with King Alexander.
Good morning, President Alexander. When you first arrived, I think I heard you make reference to distance learning and virtual classrooms in an address. And I think this is a situation that not just LSU, but land-grant universities around the country face. Obviously, virtual classrooms and distance learning so much less expensive to operate than brick and mortar makes higher education more affordable. How do you balance that obvious trend going forward with the financial needs of maintaining such a huge brick and mortar presence?
Well, the brick and mortar presence, I think, is not going to change. Traditional students, your 18 to 24 year olds, are still flooding in to colleges and universities like ours with the brick and mortar atmosphere. The online presence that we need to aggressively address is a whole different set of adult learners, veterans, and others that are all over the world that we need to be a key player in educating. We have three groups of people that we really need to use our online education to address. One is the 50% of college dropouts that left college for various reasons that are out there that need to finish. Two, it's the adult learners who are not going to relocate to a brick-and-mortar campus, but need to have some certification, some type of associate's degree, some type of baccalaureate degree to pursue their career and professional goals. And thirdly, it's the veterans. Our veterans are being, or our soldiers all over the world are being asked to start taking courses once they're out of boot camp. And if we can tie into them to ensure that once they get out and they come back to us, they already have 1, 2, or even 3 years of college education already under their belt. We have to address that population, whether they're in Germany or the Philippines or in North Louisiana. So I think that we have to become much more aggressive. We cannot be complacent, and we're probably about 8 years behind where we should be with regard to online learning. So we need to aggressively catch up to address those populations.
297-5633, still time to get in with F. King Alexander and some questions, quite a few actually, online. I'll get to as many as I can. Here's one from Aaron. Would President Alexander please address what he plans to do to attract and retain excellent faculty members?
Well, first of all, the first strategy is to ensure that we have a consistent pattern of giving salary increases. That has been a top priority, and we were fortunate this past year to give a 4% increase. And that is the beginning. That is the beginning of what we can do to attract and retain. We need to take advantage of the strengths that we have. There are very few institutions that are considered land grant, sea grant, and space grant institutions, and very few institutions nationwide that have so many great programs under one campus and throughout the state. So we need to take advantage of all of our assets, but more importantly, we need to pay competitive salaries, make sure that our retirement pensions are competitive, which we're working on this year because we're concerned about where that may go, and to set a common standard of stability, of financial stability for the institution. I think that has more impact on recruiting talented faculty than anything we can do.
Here's one from David in Sherwood Forest. My wife attends LSU, getting a degree in fine arts. Her building is literally falling apart, writes David. My question is, what is your commitment, Dr. Alexander, to the arts at LSU? That from David.
Well, the fine arts facilities, we have many facilities that we've got a backlog in the billions of deferred maintenance. And we must aggressively attack this issue and work with our state to see, through state loan programs or others, to tackle some of these issues. Our commitment to the arts is one of the great things about LSU is the fact that we offer everything from great STEM education, veterinary medicine, all the way to great art programs and performing arts. So our students can come and study just about anything they want to study at LSU. And that is a great asset for that most institutions wish they had. And that is from the arts, through history, through political science, all the way to some of the most important engineering fields like petroleum engineering.
Michael Unsegan. Michael, you're on with President Alexander.
Hi, yes. I was calling because I actually remember I was in LSU from about 05 to 2011. And in that time when budgets were tight, I noticed a number of bachelor programs that were either significantly reduced or eliminated from LSU's roster. With revenues increasing, I was curious, are any of these programs likely to come back in some shape and form? And if so, what's kind of the priority list?
Many institutions had to go through a ratcheting down of programs. I think the most important way to view our programs is by student demand. And if student demand is growing, I think you'll certainly see that we're going to be looking to put more faculty in those areas to address student demand, student needs. If student demand is decreasing and the fields are changing as we follow these changing patterns of evolving academic disciplines, we have to adjust to the environment, the market. We have to adjust to the educational environment in terms of evolving academic disciplines. So I think you'll see certainly student demand drives a lot of where you'll see new revenues. And if student demand is indeed in these areas and we see majors going up, students taking more courses in these fields of study, that's where we'd like to invest future resources in.
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on WRKF with King Alexander.
Yes. Regarding the financial problems in higher ed, would you encourage your fellow college presidents to lobby Congress to do away with corporate America setting up a postal box in the Caymans and use that tax money for colleges and universities?
We certainly would like to make sure that our federal representatives understand the importance of investing in the next generation. We've got a big challenge ahead of us with regard to that. Are we putting our resources in the right place? That's your point. I have concerns about how we're going to fund higher education, but more important, K-12 education as we go forward. We're the only country in the world that has the best educated 55 to 64-year-old population. But when you compare that to the 25 to 34-year-old population, we rank 11th in the OECD. That's going to drop to 16th in 2016 and 19th in 2020 if nothing changes. So I have great concerns about our concern for the next generations that are on the way and what we're doing to support them, whether it's through the federal government or through our states.
What's been your biggest surprise in 6 months at LSU?
The biggest surprise is actually there isn't a parish in this state that doesn't love LSU. And we truly touch every community in this mm-hmm. state. What we have to do is make sure that our teaching and research and service mm-hmm. helps them address their issues and the problems that everybody deals with in this state. We're 49th in lots of things with regard to health, educational success. And if we're not helping our state produce better graduates, have higher educational attainment levels, better health, better economic development, then we're really not doing our job as a flagship university.
Well, and a very good football program always helps the cause, and that may be why LSU is so popular in every one of the 64 parishes. Is the stadium expansion going to be complete as expected?
We're on schedule, but holding our breath. That is a very important timeline that we have to make sure that timeline doesn't drift off like many others have.
101,000 seats, meaning that on Saturday nights, Tiger Stadium becomes the fifth largest city in Louisiana. Little different than it was at Long Beach.
It's a lot different, and I know my campus police share my concerns that it's not just the 101,000 that are in the stadium, it's the other 100 that are outside the stadium without tickets. So we have to make sure everybody has a wonderful but very safe experience, and making safety is our number one concern, and making sure that in an environment like that, people can get in and out safely, they enjoy their experience, and they come back again and again.
Here's a question from Tommy. in University Acres. Will college wrestling return to LSU? That's an interesting one.
That's the second question I've gotten on wrestling in the last 2 weeks. There's certainly a number of wrestling aficionados out there that wrestling has taken a beating throughout the country, and it's hanging on in certain areas. In certain areas of the Midwest with the Big Ten, it has as much to do with how strong high school wrestling is. And with high school wrestling waning throughout the country, I think it has certainly hurt the wrestling programs throughout the United States. And Title IX wrestling has been quite a target to ensure that we are doing as much for female athletics as we are for male athletics. But I don't see it coming back in a wave. I see it in sporadic areas being very strong. But you also have to have a bunch of schools around you doing it in order to play and have a successful season and not spend a ton of money on a sport that you have to travel to Iowa, California, and New York to have matches.
Adam asked a question I like. Will the day come when LSU will play Southern in college football?
You know, I don't know when the last time we played. The schedule is an athletic issue. I keep an eye on it for many of our schedules. It'd be certainly nice to support our in-state partners in this. We need our in-state partners when we lobby together, and which we're doing in Baton Rouge with our legislature. We play Southern in many sports. Football is such a high-profile sport. I don't know down the road. I can't give you a good answer on whether we will schedule Southern or not in football.
Now, you commented on Governor Brown of California's management style, hands-on, comes to meetings, stays there all day, maybe even gets in the way. You didn't say that, but you were smiling. And what's your management style?
To find the best people possible in the various fields of study and in their academic areas, and to find great deans, great chancellors, and let them do their jobs. We have too much to do externally to keep the revenues coming to the institution. So my job is to ensure, whether it's from the federal government, the state, or our donors or our alumni or friends, that we're supplying the revenues necessary to move forward and to have good people within our campuses and on campus doing what they do best, which is whether it's the dean of veterinary medicine or our athletic director. They know much more about their fields than I do. And my job is not to micromanage what they do, but to see if we can provide the revenues that they need to do more of what they do well.
Now, harkening back to another question earlier, the physical plant, because of the budget cuts, has been impaired, not only at the place where that David noted, but there are some other issues on campus. How are those being addressed?
Well, when we come to even the more severe situations, they certainly bump themselves up on the priority list. We've got new facilities going in, but the deferred maintenance issue remains an issue on our campus that we're going to have to aggressively attack in the next 5 to 7 years. So even though we have had a great announcement, a wonderful announcement, $100 million new College of Engineering building matched by the governor with $50 million and $50 million in donor support, which will help us get from 650 engineers to almost 1,000, we also have to look at what we're doing within the campus to address the deferred maintenance issues.
Well, we're glad you're on the job. You're obviously a vigorous man who knows higher education pretty well. And thank you for spending time with us today, F. King Alexander. And LSU remains one of the most beautiful places in the world. I'm sure the prettiest campus you've ever been affiliated with.
Absolutely, Jim. It's wonderful.
Thank you. Hopefully we'll do this again soon.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. In studio now is the man who was once the budget director for the great state of Louisiana, Steve Wynnum. He's here to talk primarily about another topic, but since we brought it up, I know you still follow what's going on in our state.
Yeah, I do.
What do you think?
Well, I don't think it's any secret to you or anybody else that I'm not particularly happy with the way things are going, and I'm not alone in that. I think that our state budget We've had a structural budget problem for over a decade. We're doing little to address it, and that concerns me.
Why aren't we addressing it?
Well, I think that it's because it's easy to simply ignore it until we hit the wall. And we've been fortunate so far to have not hit the wall, mostly from serendipity. You can only patch a budget together for so long before eventually you run out of these little tiny miracles.
Well, the long-term prognosis for Louisiana, as a man who's followed it as long as you have, going back over 25 mm-hmm. years now.
Yes.
How does it look when you peer into your crystal ball?
Well, this year's budget, as presented, would appear to be a little bit better than what we've seen in the past. But it's hard to really, make a firm or draw a firm conclusion about that based on the information that we have right now. We entered this cycle supposedly with a $500 million, structural deficit. We now are talking about adding things to the budget as opposed to making reductions. So I'm not quite sure how we managed to balance or present a balanced budget this year.
John Kennedy, your friend and mine, he has called for a reduction in state contracts, consulting contracts. Mm-hmm. He says that in itself could resolve the budget quandary. Is he right?
Well, if you look at the number, he's right. I mean, if you applied a percentage to those contracts, you could certainly come up with more than the $500 million that the Alvarez and Marcel consultants have been retained to find. But
for $4 million, right?
Yes, but you have to.
I bet you'd do it for a lot less than $4 million, wouldn't you?
Well, I told a friend of mine I could submit a couple of lists this afternoon, and I'd do it for $2 million.
And it might be a better list, but Steve Wynnum is a man who follows the process closely. We need to call on him more often in this realm, but. We want to talk with you about something else that you're intricately involved in, and that's in your home area of St. Francisville, major literary event coming. And the police jury in West Feliciana Parish has approved a bid of $2.7 million to construct a new library.
Mm-hmm. And the library is under construction, and I'm happy to say that our first six, this will be our seventh symposium for writers and lovers of writers. In our first six, we were able to raise almost $14,000 for that library. So we're very pleased about that, and I'm really proud to be involved with Arts for All and with this gathering of writers and readers. It's a fun day. If you love writing or reading or both, it's your thing.
Well, this will happen Saturday the 22nd, so we're a couple of weeks away at the Hemingbow Cultural Arts Center, just south of St. Francisville. It's an all-day event beginning at 8:30. That's 2 weeks from tomorrow, and it'll be moderated by Southeastern Louisiana University professor, Charles Elliott, former bookstore owner.
And he's a character in his own right.
And he too, is a writer.
Yes.
But four professional authors will be featured, as well as Ernest Gaines, great writer who resides not far from here and is a giant in the literary world and is as fine a man as he is a writer. He will be the major name on the marquee, but you've got some others as well.
We absolutely do. If you read the Sunday paper, you know Rita Grimsley Johnson, and we'll start our program with her. And by the way, the way the program works is that each of four authors present their works and their creative processes in the morning. In the afternoon, Charles Elliott moderates a panel discussion. In the middle of that, we have a wonderful lunch. Arlen Deese at Hemingbow provides the lunch, and Hemingbow is a beautiful place anyhow. But we start with Rita that morning, and her most recent book is Hank Hung the Moon and Warmed Our Cold, Cold Hearts, about uh-huh. Hank Williams.
Uh-huh.
But as I say, her column appears every Sunday in our local paper. Then we have our own Ann Butler, who's a historian, author, journalist. She's written many books, including a true crime drama. Then we have Julie Kane, former poet laureate of Louisiana. She's a professor at Northwestern. She's originally from Massachusetts, went to Cornell, Boston University, and got her Ph.D. at LSU. Then our headliner is Wiley Cash. And Wiley's a relatively young author and who studied actually under Ernest J. Gaines when Ernest Gaines was the writer in residence at the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. And Dr. Gaines, of course, has his Doctor of Letters honorary degrees from both the University of North Carolina and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. So there's a definite connection there. And when Wiley, his first book was a wonderful book, and he has a new book that has just come out, This Dark Road to Mercy. His first book was A Land More Kind Than Home. The wonderful thing about Wiley is that he allows narrators to tell his story, and each narrator speaks with his or her own voice, and it's very interesting. And poetry is not my big thing, and as a matter of fact, I don't think I really appreciated it at all until I got involved with this symposium. But Julie Kane has some truly wonderful poetry, and we've had great poets at every one of these symposia.
Well, Wiley Cash, Dr. Wiley Cash, is planning to be with us at some point in the next few weeks prior to your event on the 22nd. And his book, A Land More Kind Than Home, has been termed by NPR as great Southern fiction filled with whiskey, guns, and snake handling.
Right, and that's very true, but that doesn't do justice to the work. I like that comment, but it doesn't really capture the depth of his writing.
So for those who wish to show up at Hemingbow on the 22nd, what do we have to do?
Well, your best bet is tickets are selling pretty briskly right now, and we have limited seating. We Arlen will accommodate up to 200 people. Right now, we've got attendance at about 116 as of this morning. So your best bet is to Google Arts for All and A Gathering of Writers and Readers or Brown Paper Tickets, and you'll see a link to order the tickets online, and that's the best way to do it. We can take mail order mail orders at Post Office Box 2551 St. Francisville, but it's quick and easy to use brown paper and get your tickets, and you're in business.
Well, Steve Wynnum, we thank you for being with us, and we'll talk more about this event as we get closer, and certainly we hope to talk to you about the budget.
Thank you,
Jim. The session starts in just over a month. We're joined now by Dr. Rebecca Parker. She is a duly ordained Methodist and Unitarian Universalist minister. She is appearing at the Unitarian Church on Goodwood in Baton Rouge tonight, 7 o'clock, tomorrow at noon. And she is a person who has some fascinating thoughts about Christianity that she has detailed in her latest work. Good morning, Dr. Parker.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks so much for having me.
Good to hear your voice. What will be the primary focus of your address tonight?
Tonight I'm lecturing on some groundbreaking research that I and a co-author have published in a book called Saving Paradise, How Christianity Traded Love for This World for Crucifixion and Empire. And our research shows that something very interesting for many people of faith, which is that for nearly the first 1,000 years of Christianity, when Christians gathered to worship, they were not focused on the crucifixion of Jesus and his saving death. Instead, they were focused on the beauty and abundance of creation. And they had a spirituality that with a sense of paradise present here and now. And this is a very different sense of what it means to be a Christian than what many of us think of Christianity now. So the purpose of the lecture is to open up for people this different world of Christianity that's unfamiliar to many of us and invite us to think about what it might mean to orient our Christian faith to love of the world here and now.
Why do you think Christianity has evolved into something that is less appealing to you and to others than the first 1,000 years?
Well, I wouldn't say Christianity is less appealing to me. I'm a deeply committed Christian as well as a progressive person of faith. But when Christianity turned in its second millennium to focus on crucifixion, the crucifixion of Jesus, it also turned to more to sanctioning violence in a lot of forms. We see this in the way Christians. It's a tragic part of Christian history, the way Christian theology ended up sanctioning conquest and colonization around the world, the subjugation of people, especially, for example, the way Christianity sanctioned the enslavement of African descent people in the Americas. So this is sanctioning of violence that happens in the second millennium of Christianity is, I think, just a tragic wrong turn that Christianity took. Tomorrow morning's workshop, which starts actually at 9 at the church, I'll be looking at and sharing some of the research on why Christianity changed its orientation. But this tragic turn is one I think we need to recover from and reorient ourselves to a deeper faithfulness to love for life and an understanding of Jesus as one who opens our eyes and ears to not only to our neighbors but to the earth itself and asks us to live in love and compassion and justice here and now.
Dr. Parker is a world-renowned theologian, lecturer, author. Tonight she'll be at the Unitarian Church on Goodwood at 7, tomorrow at noon, and then she'll join Reverend Steve Crump, Reverend Nathan Ryan in the pulpit on Sunday morning. So it'll be quite a weekend in Baton Rouge for Dr. Rebecca Parker, who has espoused her deep belief and commitment to Christianity, but has some thoughts about how the Christian faith has changed from one that was in one mindset in the first millennium and another since. How has that affected our world today, contemporarily?
Well, I think that the turn to a more crucifixion-centered Christianity it's been tied to a kind of otherworldly focus as well. And paradise shifted from being something that was open to us here and now in the abundance and beauty of the earth to something that was either lost at the beginning of time or something that might come in a new world that God would create after destroying this one. And that's affected for many people, our whole sense that we don't have to take care of the earth now and or life now because our real life is in the future or in an other world. And that has a lot of effect on big issues before us as a society and a culture and the globe, like global climate change and all the ecological issues, and also the issues of what's happening for the income inequalities and the life of folks who are poor or middle class and struggling. We need a faith that says here and now, taking care of each other and the earth is what God calls us to do, what our spiritual values call us to do. And when we don't have that focus in our religion can lead to a lot of tragedy happening in the world. So I see a big tie between the cultural shift to crucifixion-centered theology and the social issues that are manifest in things like our lack of care for the environment and our lack of care for each other.
How does it affect politics?
Well, we have we've got a lot of debate going on these days between different worldviews, even in the U.S. culture. I think we see that in the division. And like a lot of us, would like to see us come together and get beyond the polarization that is kind of paralyzing our ability to work together on behalf of our communities and so it affects politics when people hold to views. Let me put it in the positive. I think if we can move to more shared convictions of the goodness of life and our responsibility to take care of each other and take care of the earth, we would have a better basis for facing the challenges before us.
Tonight at 7, and I'm told that tomorrow, actually, Dr. Parker and others at the Unitarian Church will start at 9. That's 9 in the morning, not noon, but 9 in the morning tomorrow. And then she also will be part of the services on Sunday. What's your take on the Unitarian Church?
Well, I'm a Unitarian Universalist minister as well as a United Methodist, so I'm blessed to relate to both worlds. And one of the things that's great about Unitarian Universalists is an openness, deep openness to asking questions and bringing the life of the mind as well as the heart together in faith and spirituality, and also a very deep and strong commitment to ethical living and taking care of each other here and now. That emphasis on heaven is here if we will embrace it and live in right relationship to it. We can make hell on earth, and we can embrace the gifts of heaven on earth. That's one of the strong emphases of Unitarian Universalism, and it's a great and wonderful tradition and faith to be part of.
Well, thank you, Dr. Parker, and hope you enjoy your stay here in Baton Rouge. And you can see and hear Dr. Parker tonight, 7 o'clock. Until Monday, for Frank Barnett, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.